Welcome. We're glad you've joined us for this Hand in Hand podcast. Hand in Hand is a nonprofit organization, and we provide information, classes, training, and lots of support for parents like you. We call our approach Parenting by Connection, and it's based on the insight that you deserve good support as you parent, and every child needs lots of connection in order to thrive. We offer tools to help you foster support for yourself and connection in your family. We hope this podcast gives you exactly the kind of support you're looking for.
Welcome to the teleseminar, Diffuse the Mind, for those who've just joined us. Diffuse the Mind, sharing and the give and take of relationships. It's great to be here with you on this call. I'm joined again by Emily Murray, who will be the co-presenter, and you'll hear more from her very soon. And you're on the line right now with parents from all different time zones. I'm seeing somebody from New York and Toronto, Puerto Rico even. So you're all in good company here. So I'm going to start our teleseminar off by sharing just a little bit about me and then about hand-in-hand parenting. My name is Susan Derby, and I'm a Parenting by Connection instructor in Los Angeles, California. I live with my husband and two daughters who are 8 years old and 2 years old, and I teach classes locally on the west side of Los Angeles, and I sometimes also lead phone support groups for those who take the starter class online through Hand in Hand Parenting. Some of you may have taken that course. So I was introduced to Hand in Hand when my older daughter was 3 years old. I was really at my wit's end with parenting at that time. I didn't know how to set limits. I found her frequent and very intense tantrums really emotionally challenging for me. And I recognized that I needed help, that my family needed help. And luckily, I got some support. My support began with a really wonderful preschool that we found for her locally here in Los Angeles. And at the school, they give all new families a set of Listening to Children booklets by Patty Whistler. Many of you are probably familiar with this set of booklets. And so I started diving in to that content and learning about special time and stay listening and all these various tools. And I began practicing them and pretty immediately began seeing transformations within my family. And this increased the more I used the tools. And eventually, I was just so inspired by these tools that I decided to become an instructor and signed on to the instructor certification training course. And I've been supporting parents ever since and just really love this work. So for those of you who are new to Hand in Hand Parenting, I want to spend just a couple minutes giving a little background information about the organization and its approach. Patty Whistler founded the organization that's now known as Hand in Hand Parenting in 1989, and since then it's grown tremendously. It supports parents internationally, offering lots of resources and classes and trainings. There are instructors all over the world. The website is incredibly packed, information-packed, articles on all kinds of subjects. And the approach advocated by Hand in Hand is called Parenting by Connection. And that is based on the idea that kids thrive when they feel a strong sense of connection with their parents and caregivers. It's this connectedness and a secure attachment that helps kids be more cooperative and better able to learn. And we feel that this is the natural state of kids. Our way of thinking is a little bit different than some other approaches out there, because our way of thinking about kids is that they are naturally flexible and they are naturally wanting to connect well with others, and they want harmonious relationships. And yes, that includes sharing, so we'll talk more about that. So again, to help kids operate from this place of flexibility and harmony, they need to feel connected. So to foster that kind of connection, Hand in Hand offers tools for adults to use with kids. And we also find that when adults get support, they're better able to listen to their kids, to listen to their kids' feelings. So we offer parent-to-parent listening tools as well. So in this hour of this teleseminar, we're going to focus primarily on a couple of the tools in relation to the topic of sharing. And we'll be touching more on that theme of the natural flexibility of children, with the idea that there are strategies that we can use to help our children tap into that innate generosity and cooperativeness. So before I turn things over to Emily to say more about some of those themes, I just want to give a quick logistical reminder for those who've just joined in the last few minutes. If at any time during the call you have a question, you can press star 2 on your phone to raise your hand, and we'll then receive the heads up that you have a question, and we'll open things up to hear those questions near the end of the hour after Emily and I are done with our main presentations. So with that said, I'm going to turn things over now to Certified Parenting by Connection instructor Emily Murray.
Hello. Thank you so much, Susan. It's really fun. I really enjoy doing these calls because it's an amazing way to connect with parents all over the world. The fact that Susan is in California and I'm in Maine and many of you are in many other time zones, it's just it's so inspiring to me that we have this resource where we can all come together like this. So I live in Maine, and I'm the co-founder of an organization in Maine called Birth Roots. And we offer classes and groups and resources and support for families throughout pregnancy and early parenting. And I discovered Hand in Hand similarly to Susan, my older daughter, who's now 10. She was about 3, and I found another approach that was similar that talked a lot about stay listening type approaches. And I found very quickly that while those were effective, we weren't getting anywhere. And it wasn't until I discovered the hand-in-hand tools that felt a little bit more well-rounded that we really made the leap from me feeling stressed and triggered and all of those things that parents feel when they're overwhelmed to feeling like we had a really solid connection. So I want to share with you a couple of the tools that are really great for just creating a general sense of children feeling that natural ability to share, that natural ability to connect. They have it. And if we can do some things on a regular basis as kind of, if you think about it, as preventive maintenance for just for their well-being in general and for your relationships in general, these things will really help their ability and up their ability to feel generous in the moment when there are two children wanting the same thing. So pillars of the hand-in-hand approach are special time, which is an opportunity for the parent or caregiver to set aside a chunk of time, and it can be 2 minutes, it can be 20 minutes, it can be 2 hours, whatever you have time for, where you are committed to fully tuning in and turning your attention to this child. It's like the sun shining on a plant. Your child is going to soak up this attention. You are thinking well of them. It's child-led, so you are invited into their world. And just infusing that time with positive energy, with love, with attention, with laughter, and following their lead so they can tell you, here's what I need, here's the nourishment I need today. So you get to be like a multivitamin that is customized based on exactly what they need in that moment that day. And so special time just helps to set the stage for generosity and for feeling flexible. And stay listening is the other side of that coin, and stay listening happens when off-track behavior is happening. So Susan's going to talk a little bit more about stay listening. She's going to give you some ideas for in the moment when you're in that friction spot of both children wanting to share. But I'll just give you a little taste of it, because stay listening on a regular basis is also preventive maintenance. So stay listening is a way for a parent or a caregiver to just create space and be a container for a child who's having a really hard time. And you can literally kind of bring them into your lap and curl your arms around them. Or for some kids, it's more of a I'm staying near kind of container. But being that container and accepting what they're feeling, validating what they're feeling, helps those big emotions to come up and flow out. There's no resistance. You're not telling them what they're thinking or feeling is wrong. You're just, even if you're thinking that, but you're just simply being there and letting those feelings be what they are and come up and come out. So special time and stay listening. And you can find lots of great information about those two tools on the Hand in Hand website. And you can also download the booklet to get the really detailed information about them. And it's something that you talk about in many of the classes that Hand in Hand Parenting has to offer. But beyond those, I wanted to give you some ideas of some preventive maintenance options that aren't as easily accessed on the website. And one of them is a little bit contrary to what our culture says that parents should be doing with their children. We're, especially in the United States, those of you who aren't in the United States, I'm not sure if you get the same level of intensity of children should be obeyed and parents should tell them what to do and children should obey what their parents say. But what you can do is pull back from that model and experiment with modeling generosity yourself with your child and using the language of sharing and waiting on a daily basis. So this becomes part of your daily vocabulary. And the thinking behind this is that when children see it and experience it being done to them, they will be more ready and able to give that same level of generosity back. Kind of the do as I say, not as I do model, reverse. So you want them to say and do what you're modeling. So modeling generosity. So if your child asks for a drink from your cup, you could say, of course, I love sharing with you. Have a sip. Have more. And if they ask for a turn with your pen, you could say, oh, I'm not quite finished. I need to finish this sentence. But if you wait for just 1 minute, I'd be happy to share this with you when I'm done. What do you want to do while you wait? Can you count on your fingers or, you know, maybe offer a suggestion? But the practice of sharing and the practice of waiting can be infused into your daily routine with the parent really modeling that for the child. So even if you experiment with this approach for just a week or so, just to see what might happen in our house if I make it a point on a daily basis to model generosity, to model waiting, to call it out, to name it, and see if your children can kind of pick up on that and see if it doesn't help with giving them the language to use on their own and see if they can pick that up. So another kind of perspective shift that can help in this preventive maintenance piece is to change our perspective that when children are feeling possessive about things, when they don't want to let go of something they've been using and hand it over to another person, it might not be, and likely isn't, that they're being selfish. That word could get banned from our vocabulary while we're experimenting with ways to support sharing. They aren't being selfish. They are being busy, and they're being engaged with a project or an object. And children have an amazing ability to sink into a project. Their attention span becomes so focused on this one thing. And as we were preparing for this teleseminar, I was thinking about the times in my day or week that I'm so engaged with something that I kind of tune out the rest of the room. And I do a fair amount of reading in the evening. And I've been known on occasion to not hear my husband asking a question. And I was thinking, if someone came up to me in that moment and said, oh, I wanted that. I wanted to read that book. I'm so excited to read that book. And tried to take it out of my hand, I might be a little cranky and possessive about that. So if you think about children doing their work, and for children, work and play are synonymous, allowing them the opportunity to stay tuned into that project, to keep their attention span focused on it until they are done, is an amazing way to respect that attention span so they don't get distracted, so they can finish their project. So banning the word selfish and flipping it to think about children as intense studiers of the things that they're playing with and working with. A piece that I heard about early on in my work with hand-in-hand parenting, I think it was on a podcast or a video that's available on the website. Patty Whipler talks about a policy for sharing in your home. And this has made such a difference now that my older daughter is 10 and we have another daughter who's two and a half now. We are in that prime window of practicing sharing a lot, as many of you are. And Patty talks about making it a policy in your home that whoever has a thing can have it for as long as they want it. And this goes along with what I was just mentioning before. This allows your child to complete their work with whatever they're using. It allows them to fully investigate that attention span. And then the other piece of this is you as the grown-up in the room, the parent, the caregiver, whatever your role is, you then transition to helping the person who has to wait. And that's getting a little bit more into the active part of listening and the active part of helping children who share. But those are the key pieces in my mind for setting the stage, for creating policies, creating conditions in your home, in your school, in your preschool, in play groups where you are. You can have these conversations with co-parents, with other parents in your support network to create conditions where you are modeling generosity, you are modeling waiting. Everyone is on the same page with the perspective that when a child is clutching desperately to their toy or to their thing, that they aren't being selfish. They're just really interested in finishing what they were doing with that toy. And lastly, again, the policy of each person has the opportunity to have the thing for as long as they want it, and the other person can be helped with waiting, with some stay listening time. So I'll turn it back over to Susan, who's going to share some more tips and ideas for in the moment where both children are trying to clutch the same toy.
Thank you so much, Emily. I just loved your great ideas and perspectives and thinking about what's behind sharing. And, just lots of food for thought in there and just real respectful strategies to try. So thank you for that. So as Emily mentioned, I'm going to be talking a bit about what to do in the moment with sharing. And so I'll be talking for a little while on this. And then just so you know what's around the corner, we'll be talking about playful strategies next around sharing. But first off, in the moment. So, you know, sometimes we really can't predict those times when sharing or refusal to share might arise. And sometimes a struggle involves children at a park or another public place. Sometimes it's, you know, siblings at home or play dates or play groups or whatever. But especially at times when strangers are involved, I think it can feel especially tricky. At least that's the case in my experience. You know, not all adults out there, as I'm sure you're well aware,
are knowledgeable about this different way to think about sharing. And many of them feel that they should force their child to share, or you might feel expectations out there that other people want your child to be, quote unquote, taught to share. So then sharing becomes adult enforced sharing, where, you know, you've got terms that become mandatory, and then feelings by adults become really charged around waiting for turns, feelings by adults and children. And then there's all this insistence on turns, and then you're defending your right to a turn, and you know the whole thing. So it can get complicated. So what I'll talk about first then is that if you're out there and the sharing struggle arises, and you notice that your little one is really wanting something that isn't hers or his, then what you might do is verbalize what you're noticing and acknowledge what she's expressing. So you could say something like, you know, let's say you're in a playground, and you say something like, Anita has the red bucket and she's using it. I hear that you really want it. I'll sit with you while we wait for it to be free. So it's that let's sit and wait that Emily talked about earlier. You know, I'll sit with you while we wait. Okay? And so this is where we're listening to a want. You know, we're setting a limit in that we're not going to negotiate getting the red bucket or finding a quick fix so that you can all just get out of there and, you know, move on. We're seeing it through if we can, and we're offering our support. So, you know, again, I know it's hard. I'll sit with you while you wait. So that's when we're likely to get into the territory of stay listening, which Emily talked about earlier, where we are supporting our child, we're sitting with our child through their tears or through other emotional expression, helping to support that hardship. It's hard to not get what you want. So, you know, again, like you're in a public place, tears are hard for many adults to handle. They're very triggering for many adults. So if you notice that your child's tears, your child's tantrum, whatever it is going to be hard for the other adult or adults involved and may compel them to step into forcing their kid to share, then maybe you'll want to find a way to politely step away. You know, you could say something like, oh, you know, it's okay. Anita should keep playing with that red bucket. My little one has feelings about it, and that's okay with me, and I'm going to sit with her over there. You know, I'm going to sit with her over there. So you're removing yourself from the situation, but you're allowing your little one space for her, his feelings. So you're not fixing the problem. You know, you're not fixing that surface level problem anyway. But what you are doing in this kind of scenario is you're supporting something deeper for your child. So by listening to the emotions that come up surrounding what's hard about sharing, you're helping them to unloose some of the underlying tension that they're carrying around. So my guess is that after you listen to a good cry or a good tantrum about the red bucket or you know, whatever it is out there, that you'll find yourself with a much more relaxed child at the end, a child who's happy to find something else to do if Anita never wants to let go of that red bucket, right? So you unloose some of that rigidity, and you help support your child on his or her path toward more flexibility. So another thing, if you're finding that things are really hard at a play date or on the playground or elsewhere, another thing you might try in the moment is special time, which Emily referred to as well. She talked about working well as a preventative measure if your child is, you know, constantly having difficulties around sharing, and it's really effective in that way. And it can also be used in the present moment. You know, I remember one time when my older daughter was 5 years old, and we were on a trip, on a weekend trip with a few other families. It was a group, you know, lots of young kids. I think my daughter was one of the oldest ones. And it was really cool. It was at a horse ranch, an hour and a half out of town. And we were staying in these really cool covered wagons. It was a circle of wagons. And our covered wagon somehow became the play zone for all the kids on the first day. And the kids were having a great time. They're getting super rowdy and starting to play with my daughter's toys. So she was okay with that for a little bit. But then things started getting a little sticky, and she, you know, I heard kind of the whining starting a little bit, and she started grabbing certain toys and designating items that, you know, so-and-so and so-and-so shouldn't touch. And I noticed that rigidity. I noticed that there was a rigidity there behind her grabbiness. And while my impulse at first was to tell her she needed to share her things, I took a pause and I stepped back. And I thought, okay, you know, here's a time for special time. And I took her aside and I offered her 10 minutes of special time. Now, my daughter has been, you know, experiencing special time as, since she was 3 years old. She loves it. It is that emotional vitamin that Emily referred to. I loved Emily's analogy, actually, of, special time being that sun shining on a plant. It really is this, emotional vitamin D. So my daughter just loves it. So, and she's never one to refuse it. So, when we were in that covered wagon and I offered it, she quickly agreed. She was ready to step away from the group. So we went out of the wagon and I set the timer that I had on my phone for 10 minutes and, asked her, you know, what do you want to do? And what she wanted to do was to go away from all the other kids and the families to the parents. So she led me over to the other side of the grounds. There was a teepee there that was unoccupied. So she took me there, and, of course, she wanted to check out the inside of the teepee. So we tried out all the cots. We did the, like, mama bear, papa bear thing and explored around in there. And then there was a wooden deck outside. And so she wanted to dance and sing. So that's what we did. You know, we just I don't remember what it was now that we sang, but we just, you know, sang at the top of our lungs, definitely got some stares from other people who didn't know us. But we just, you know, I just poured my attention into it. I poured my attention into that activity and, you know, my delight and enthusiasm, you know, which we do when we're having special time with our child. We just, you know, we are just having the most fun in the entire world and shining our own attention on them. And we have this great time together. And it was just 10 minutes, but throughout that process, I could just see her stress and tension dissipate. And so the timer went off, and she was a more relaxed person than she had been 10 minutes prior. And we went back. We joined the group, and she joined right in on the play again, forgetting that tight hold that she had on our toys before. So that worked out really well for us, using special time as an in-the-moment strategy, because it was the first day again of that weekend, and it just really ended up being this great way to shake some of those stuck emotions loose that she'd been carrying around. And we just had a great time with everyone the rest of the weekend. So I do want to share another story. I'm just doing a time check here. Yeah, we've got some time. I want to share another story. It's one that I like from the Hand in Hand blog by a woman who worked at a daycare. She talks about a boy there who would constantly go up to the other kids and grab whatever it was that they were playing with, or he would hit the other kids sometimes too. And this woman was in one of the Hand in Hand classes, and she learned about the tools. So with this new perspective that she was getting, she decided to intervene one day. And so she saw the boy take a toy away from another child, and she went in close to him, and she said, "I can't let you do that. I'm going to stay with you right now because you aren't able to play well with the other children." So she stayed physically close to him. He started crying, and then he ran away from her. He ran over to a cot and threw himself down, and he had this really good, long, heavy cry while she continued to stay close to him. This is the process of stay listening, okay? And so the next day, he grabbed at a toy again, and she intervened again. But this time she said, "I can't let you do that. I'm going to take you outside with me, and I'll listen to you there." Okay, so she removed him from the situation, And there he was in her lap outside, and he had another really good long cry. And then that emotional storm passed, and he was thinking more clearly again. And then he felt safe enough to tell her about what was really going on with him. And he said, "The other kids don't want to play with me. They don't want to be my friend." So she listened and asked if he wanted to say anything else, and he started crying again. And then, after a while, he said the same thing. "The other kids don't want to play with me." And she kept listening and kept asking that question, "Is there anything else?" And he kept crying and then saying the same thing. And then it would be over. And that cycle continued. But then the crying became less and less. And there he was, you know, on her lap, going through cycle after cycle of this until he finished crying and was done with this, you know, done with this offloading, this hurt. So after that, she said that this boy became way less grabby in general, and even better, a couple days later, he came up to her. He came up to her inside the daycare, and he had another boy with him, and he was really proud and enthusiastic, and he said, "Look, Miss Ann, here's my new friend." So I just thought that that was a really beautiful example on the Hand in Hand blog, illustrating the different kinds of hurts and fears that kids can carry around with them, sometimes unbeknownst to us, and how these can manifest in ways like rigidities around sharing, and also how beautiful it is and how healing it can be for a child when an adult takes the time to truly listen to them, to truly listen to all of their feelings, including all the yucky ones. So I hope some of this was helpful. We'll carry on now. And since we have a little bit of time, we still do have a little bit of time before our Q&A, Emily and I wanted to mention a few playful strategies about sharing. Emily, are you ready to start us off?
Yeah, absolutely. So as we were preparing for tonight's call, I was doing kind of a mental inventory of things that I've observed other parents doing and things that I've experimented with in my own home and in the childcare settings where we go. And it, again, it kind of broke down for me into there are some things you do before a sharing situation would arise, kind of that pre-work that helps children work on the idea of sharing before they even come into a scene where they need to or want to share, or another child wants them to. And then there's kind of the in-the-moment playful things that you can do. So one of my favorite things about this approach, the hand-in-hand approach in particular, is the wealth and richness of the stories that we parents share with each other. When we can say to another parent, "Oh, this was a total disaster. I tried this and it was an absolute fail. I might try this next time." Or when we can share our successes, it just helps to keep us all fueled and all thinking and all feeling agile in our approach to helping our children be at their best, to be flexible and generous and playful with each other. So I want to share a few strategies that kind of fall on the pre-work side. And then I'll share a couple of strategies for you find yourself in the moment and how to bring a little bit of play and a little bit of silliness to what can be a tight place and an emotional place for both kids and parents. So one thing I was noticing with a friend of my toddler's is there seems to be a sense of if I don't have everything, I go into a panic state. So we, at the beginning of a play date, the other parent and I kind of just started right out of the gate with, "We have so many toys here. There are so many." And the thing that they were interested in at first was the bucket of stuffed animals. So we took all the stuffed animals out and dumped them all on the floor and rolled in them and threw them and played with them and tossed them and just played around with the idea of abundance. There's so much here.
that we can't possibly run out. there's enough. So
that idea of abundance, enough, any kind of playful thing you can do around that to help children settle into really feeling it, and not having to feel possessive about the few I might run out. Another technique that I've seen hand in hand suggest in different ways, but I think is useful here, is telling the story of what's going to happen to a child to give them a chance to offload any feelings they have about it before it even happens. So if you find that either there's a scenario with the same child that's playing, that you're doing play dates with, or a school scenario, you can work with either child or all the children ahead of time to say something like, we're going to play with Sarah this afternoon. Sarah's going to come to our house. And I want to make sure that we have all of our toys ready so you and Sarah have some things to play with. I think she's going to want to play with the Matchbox cars. And, oh, she might want to play with the Play-Doh, too. And just doing that verbal inventory of, here's what's about to happen. Here are the actual toys that might be fought over. And giving the owner child a chance to have feelings about that. They may want to be grabby. They may want to hoard those things to themselves while you're doing this playful approach to kind of preparing them for the day. But you can work on stay listening, you can work on play listening before the scene, before the actual scene, and let those feelings come out. So then when Sarah does come over and she does want to play with all of the Play-Doh toys, your child has had a chance to already work on those feelings. They've already had a chance to bubble them up, so it's not quite such a hair trigger moment. And a favorite at our house that works in for a lot of things, but sharing can be a big one too, is two beloved adults that the child knows, maybe both parents, can play a game of she's mine. And you actually are going to fight over the child, and someone takes the feet and someone takes the torso, and you have a playful, silly tug of war back and forth of, I want her, no, she's mine, no, I had her first. And children tend to delight in being fought over. So to make the child the object that is being sought and wanted and fought over can be a fun way to turn sharing onto a whole new playing field of, it's not an object, it's the child that's being wanted and sought. So that can just be a fun way to build connection in general, but I think it could be useful for some kids in working out some sharing stuck places. So I have a couple more stories that I'll tell you that are a little bit more on the scene. When you encounter an argument or a tug of war between two children. Particularly because we're right on the ocean here in Maine, we have a lot of pictures of crabs and lobsters and things like that around us. So we have a few stuffed animals as well. So we talk about grabby hands and pinchy hands and crabby hands. And I thought it could be fun. I haven't tried this one yet, so you'll have to help me experiment with it. But I thought it might be fun to turn grabby hands of children grabbing at the same toy. If an adult sees those grabby hands starting, where a tug of war is about to begin, the adult can insert themselves in between the children and say, "What? We don't let grabby hands in here. Grabby hands outside. You're not allowed. But we do have crabby hands, and I'm going to grab your toes." So then chasing after the children with crab pincher hands, going after their toes, going after their ankles. Sometimes a change of pace where people are running, people are laughing, it's silly, there's a lot of physical play, can help to diffuse that moment of tension where both children wanted the same thing. So diffusing with some vigorous play is a great approach in general, and that's just one idea of how that might go. And I've had a great run of working with sharing by taking toys by accident, in air quotes. It's a little bit of a pre and it's a little bit of a during, but if you see kind of this possessive dynamic starting to peak up in children's play, you can kind of go to the other side of the room and excitedly pick up a toy that you know the children love and say, oh, I love this toy. I think it's mine. Is it mine? And usually that will get a child's attention and they'll say, no, it's mine. And they'll come and try to grab it. And in that case, you could look shocked and surprised and quickly give it back, apologize profusely for the mistake of thinking it was yours, and then move on to another beloved toy, or just the next toy that's right nearby, and see if you can kind of get some silliness and playfulness going where you're giving that kind of grabby, possessive thing a space, but it's not child against child. You've kind of redirected that at yourself as the adult who can handle it. And I think I'll tell you one more story before I think it'll be time to switch. Is that right, Susan? Do we have time for one more before we switch?
Oh, absolutely.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So a really fun one I did was inspired by a story I heard on the blog where a parent had heard from the other room two children fighting over some jewelry, and they both wanted the blue necklace. And the parent snuck in and kind of tiptoed in and pretended to be a jewel thief and tried to steal the necklace from both children who were fighting over it. And I thought, oh, that's so clever and silly and fun. And I had an opportunity to take that idea and use it the other day with Matchbox cars. So my daughter is really into setting up Matchbox cars on their little orange track, and she has a little launcher, and she gets so invested and so into it. It's one of those deep attention span experiences for her. She likes to go through every single car and launch it until it's empty. She wants to start and finish, and it's interesting to watch and observe how into it she is. And so her sister, who's 10, who probably should know better, decided to insert herself in the play. And it's rare that my 2-year-old and my 10-year-old have sharing spats these days, but it did come up, and I thought, oh, I can use this story. So what I did was I snuck over, and I started in a kind of bumbling, I really like acted it over the top, that I was a bumbling car thief. And I started with the cars that were at the end of the ramp. So it wasn't even the cars that hadn't been used yet. But I made it very clear that I was the car thief and I was coming to steal them. And I started stuffing the cars just in random parts of my clothing and up my pant leg and up an arm and in a pocket and in my hair. And it got silly, and that the girls were both trying to grab the cars away from me. And then they started trying to stuff the cars into other parts of my clothing and down my shirt, and it got raucous and silly and fun. But it totally diffused the moment. They weren't head-to-head fighting over, it's my turn anymore. It was a silly play, and my 10-year-old got bored with the game and moved on and went back to her room. And my 2-year-old got to go back to finish her process of making all of the cars go down the ramp. So it just resets the tone. It takes the feeling in the moment from a 10 down to something a little bit more manageable, like in the
the 1, 2, 3 range where children can have access to their thinking brain again. And they aren't locked in mortal combat. They can stop and laugh and reframe and restart. So play is just such a magical thing that I encourage you to experiment with it. It's a really fun tool.
So that's my last story, Susan. I don't know if you want to switch to Q&A or if you had any stories that you wanted to add before we just over.
Yeah, I think I will. I'll just add one quick one, actually. I just loved your playful strategies, though, Emily. I especially love the crabby hands, which I'm totally going to use. It's really fun. So I'll just add really quickly that, you know, we talked about, you know, special time as a tool and stay listening as a tool. And Emily talked about play listening. And but I want to offer you something just really quickly when you just don't have the energy for special time or it's only you and, you know, you can't manage to make stay listening happen or, you know, you don't have creative ideas up your sleeve for play listening. Just another quick little idea is, well, it comes in two words, actually. When sharing troubles happen at home between my two girls, these two words almost always will break it up, and that is pillow fight. So when I do a call out for pillow fight, my girls cannot resist that. Even the two-year-old has been experiencing pillow fight since before she could even move, really, you know, since before she could even crawl. And so they just can't say no to that. So that's an instant tension diffuser for us. Of course, it doesn't fix the underlying difficulty thoroughly. But in the moment, it gets everyone running to the bedroom. This is how it works in our household. Everyone runs to my husband's bed, and there's a ton of pillows on there for some reason. And we just start tossing the pillows at each other, you know, adults try not to overpower the kids or anything, but it's just a fun, lighthearted bout of roughhousing. And this usually turns into other things like, you know, airplane rides on mommy, or there's a game called Roly Poly Guacamole, which some of you seasoned hand-in-handers might be familiar with. But anyway, this just, again, it's just this instant tension diffuser, and it makes that sharing struggle a thing of the past. And when we roughhouse together in this way or, you know, in other ways, my girls usually don't have a problem then, you know, sharing in the fun, you know, sharing in the fun of the moment and also in my attention. So that's just another quick little strategy for your back pocket. And I think that is about all we have now for our presentation. So we'd love to hear from some of you if any of you have any questions. I am on the lookout now for any hands. If anybody has questions or comments whatsoever, we'd love to hear from you.
Is it a star 2 to indicate that they have a question? Is that how it works?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Thank you for that reminder, Emily. Yes, it's a star 2 to raise your hand. Okay. Yes, we have somebody from Las Vegas.
Yeah, hi. This is Delphine. Can you hear me?
Yes, hi. I'm sorry. What is your name?
Delphine.
Delphine. Thanks for joining us,
yes.
Delphine.
Thank you. This is a very interesting podcast, so thank you both very much for the help. I do have a sort of two-part question. One is, what if the sharing at the playground, for example, is something like a slide, which is usually a shared toy, but there's somebody on the slide who's refusing to go down. Mm-hmm. And then the other corresponding part of that question is, I have a 6-year-old and a 3-year-old. My 6-year-old obviously has possessions that he had before she was born, or he gets a gift at Christmas or at his birthday, and it's not community property. So is this something that we need to make everything he owns be community property, that the first come, first serve? Or does he have a right to say, you know, no, this is mine?
Yeah, you know, those are very good questions. And I come across this, I'll first address your second question. I come across this all the time with my 8-year-old and 2-year-old, because it seems like 90% of the house belongs to my 8-year-old, you know, or my 2-year-old really hasn't had
exactly.
that much time to accumulate possessions. You know, you can think about different strategies and ways to, I don't know, balance that out a bit. But with my 8-year-old, I do let her have her right to her things. You know, so kind of in the moment, I will help my younger one wait. You know, I will help her wait with stay listening and so forth. And, you know, special time if I can do it using those tools that Emily and I talked about. But what I've noticed, and this definitely still does come up in my household, but what I've noticed is that the more connected my older one feels, and by that I mean she's getting her regular special time. She's getting regular opportunities to have her feelings heard. The more flexible she is and the less likely she is to kind of institute that pecking order, you know, to making sure that the world knows what's hers and what's not. You know, I notice that she is day to day more flexible about sharing her things. And when we have bouts of time where I'm noticing she's not, you know, she is grabby, then it's a signal to me that I need to boost the connection strategies with her. And as far as, you know, sharing, I don't know, Emily, do you want to have anything
sure,
to say about anything else to say or about the slide on the playground?
Yeah, I think when you are at a public place with community things, I think there is a point where you do need to help a child along. And you can try to do it playfully. And if it's your child blocking the slide or sitting on the stairs and not allowing anyone to come up, you can kind of sneak in and maybe do something like, oh, you're stuck. How did this happen? Did you grow on your way down? And you could play with, like, I think I'm going to have to spritz some oil and make this a little more slippery. And then you could just kind of, you know, kind of poke around their bodies. You know, of course, you know, grabbing a little pinch of their bum is usually a fun way to make some giggles start. But pretend you're oiling and then help their body slide out of the way. So you're not kind of enforcing a limit directly, but you are playfully bringing a limit of, we do need to move on. And if it's someone else's child, you could bring in some of those, not obviously, you're not going to do anything physical with another person's child, but you could with your child say, huh, maybe this is a game of leapfrog, and help your child leap over the other child. So again, pushing against their rigidity, with, oh, this is not, we can't let you block the slide, but I can help children go around you. And, you know, hopefully the other parent will come in and be playful and help their child along. But there are lots of ways that you can kind of work around that. And I'll add to the second part of your question with, obviously, my 10 and my 2-year-old, there are very different toys and things that are not safe for the 2-year-old or things that are precious to the 10-year-old. And we do have a little bit of separate space for them. And I will help my older daughter choose projects and choose locations for projects or choose locations for toys that do keep them out of the reach of her little sister. And I do help her and support her in ownership of those precious things and special things. And they're just off limits to the 2-year-old, and she can have feelings about that, and I'm willing to listen to them. But those things belong to her sister. And sometimes we'll roll reverse and prevent my 10-year-old from playing with something that's precious to my 2-year-old just to she gets into it. She's playful with it, too. You know, just to give a little bit of equality and a little bit of fun on both sides, we will
separate and protect precious things.
Okay. Yeah, that definitely
helps.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for the good questions, Delphine. And I just wanted to add to Emily's great playful strategies on the playground. Those being able to approach situations in that playful way is great for kids, but I've noticed it's also great for the other adults who are around, because especially on the playground, I think there's a lot of stress around that, around sharing and around what your child's doing and how that might impact others. And so your playful approaches are contagious, and it diffuses tension for adults as well, for the other adults around as well. So thank you again for those questions. Is there anybody else who has a question or comment? Okay, well, it is actually time for us to end the call in just a few minutes. Emily will let you know about a couple hand-in-hand offerings in her closing, but first I would just like to let you all know what a pleasure it was to present to you today, and I know some of you listening to this will be doing so via a recording, and that's great too. I hope you also found some useful pieces of information during our teleseminar. And I personally would love to hear from you. If you're on Facebook, please look up my page. It's Parenting by Connection with Susan Derby. I usually post about my upcoming classes there, including those locally here in LA and those that I support over the phone through Hand in Hand. So thank you, everybody. And here's Emily.
Great. So that this hour always goes by so fast, and it's so fun to be able to present these ideas and fresh thinking and some inspiration, and I hope this fuels you all for the coming weeks. For very local people, you can find me at Birth Roots, and Birth Roots offers hand-in-hand classes once a month. And right now we're just doing skill building style classes where we might cover a specific topic, but we're also working to get some really good listening partnership groups going, usually the first weekend of every month, so first Saturday. So if you're local, come find me through Birth Roots or through Hand in Hand Parenting of Maine on Facebook. And for East Coast United States folks, I know there's still room in the Parents Retreat that's coming up this summer. I think it's the second week in June, but you can find information about that on the website. It's held this year. I think it's the first one on the East Coast. It's going to be held in the Catskills, so it will be a beautiful location, amazing facilitators, and just a way to recharge and refuel, rethink parenting styles. It would be amazing to have both parents be able to escape for a weekend. It's on my radar of something we might be able to do next year. For national and international folks, there are a couple of free calls coming up in the next month or two. The next one is Saying Sorry, Helping Kids Take Responsibility for Their Actions, and that will be on June 25th, 9 a.m. London time, 6 p.m. Sydney time. And the July call will be The Secret to Handling Your Child's Tantrums, and that's July 12th. And that's 6:30 p.m. Pacific time and 9:30 Eastern time. So those are the next big things coming up for you to look out for. But there's always the hand-in-hand parenting parent support group on Facebook. Loads of great resources on the website, great do-it-yourself classes and online classes that you can take. And all of that is on the handinhandparenting.com website, .org website. Do check those out, and I just want to remind folks that Hand in Hand is a nonprofit organization and does depend on donations to provide free services like this parenting call and the many articles on the website, the free parent discussion group, scholarships for classes, instructor training. It's very easy to donate, and any amount helps. You can do recurring donations, I believe, as well. You can just click on the donate button on the website and just give whatever you can. So I think with
I think that is the last bit of information we wanted to share with you tonight. So I just want to thank everyone again so much for taking the time today to talk parenting with us. We hope you've enjoyed the teleseminar and have had some infusion of energy and resources into your own parenting in your families. And until next time, we'll say goodbye. Thank you, everyone.
Bye, everyone. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us. Hand in Hand is here to help you get the support you need for your work as a parent. To download podcasts on additional parenting topics, go to handinhandparenting.org/store. We look forward to connecting with you again soon.